I call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources, Finance and Policy Committee to order. A quorum is present. First item of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Brand, have you reviewed the minutes?
Yes, I have reviewed the minutes and I approve it. I make a motion to please adopt the minutes.
Representative Brand moves the minutes for January 24th, 2023. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. First, we have four bills on the calendar today. These bills have been heard in some form or the other for the last several years. First up is House File 410. Representative Richardson, the Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust Account Money Transferred. Welcome to the committee, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 410 requires the Commissioner of Management and Budget to transfer $29 million from the general fund to the Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust Account before June 30th, 2024. To restore funds that were taken from the account. This amount would make the account whole by restoring money previously transferred from the account with interest. And I will note this will mark my fourth time appearing before this committee on this issue. The account was established to address both short-term and long-term environmental problems at landfills. A little history: in 2004, just over $9.9 million was transferred from the account to the general fund, and an additional $4 million was transferred to the renewable development account in 2005. Because dedicated funds were taken from the account, it is contributing to a forecasted shortfall related to the maintenance of these landfills. It's also clear that the intent of the legislature was to restore these funds. We are at a critical point, and there are significant concerns that the shortfall will impact remediation and that there is a direct threat to the public health of the people living in the surrounding communities, as there are threats to things including contaminating groundwater, surface water, and soil. Our health is impacted where we live, work, play, and worship, and no one should face worse health outcomes by virtue of their zip code. And that is exactly what will happen if we do not act. Mr. Chair, I've mentioned in this committee before that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. We have the opportunity to be proactive, responsive, and to work to prevent and mitigate environmental threats. And that begins with restoring funds to the account with interest. And with that, I would like to yield my time to the author testifiers.
Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Halverson. Good to see you back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lori Halverson, and I am Dakota County Commissioner serving District 3. I'm pleased to be back here at the legislature, and it's particularly fitting that I get to testify on this bill, my first time addressing the legislature in person, because you're really not a local elected official until you're talking about solid waste management. So this feels great to be back. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on House File 410, and I appreciate Representative Richardson for carrying this bill. The Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust, or MLCAT, is a landfill cleanup fund, as you heard, fully funded entirely by landfill fees, and it receives a quarter of its proceeds from a Metropolitan Solid Waste landfill fees. The fees on mixed municipal solid waste disposed of at two active landfills at the metropolitan area, which are in Dakota County, the Pine Bend landfill in Rosemont, and then the Burnsville landfill in Burnsville, are frankly two of the largest would be eligible for landfill funds, but these funds are not going to be there when these two landfills become eligible. Both are currently active and are the only two currently paying fees into the fund. We appreciate the work that the Minnesota legislature has done approving 2021 addition of $100,000 toward the repayment of the transfers out of the non-MLCAT uses. The current annual proceeds to this fund are about just under $1 million a year. Given that rate of return, it's going to take about 300 years is what we're estimating for the fund to get paid back. And so the notion that we will have the funds available to do the remediation possible when these landfills go offline are extremely concerning. Much more is needed to address the future of these landfills post-closure. And the proposed language in the bill will repay MLCAT after years of underfunding and borrowing, as we heard. This effort is supported by Dakota County. It's also supported by MICA, the Minnesota Intercounty Association, and the Association of Minnesota Counties. Current MLCAT balance is about $19.5 million after the return of some of the funds in 2016, but it doesn't include transfers made for other purposes in the past that have totaled nearly $14 million. These past transfers out include back in 2003, almost $10 million transferred out for the cancellation of the general fund, or to balance the budget, as we would say. In 2005, another $4 million were transferred out to the renewable development account. And both transfers included language with the intent to restore the funds as these revenues became viable for future to ensure that the state meets its obligation to the communities who host these landfills. There are seven landfills that are eligible for MLCAT funds, which includes three in Dakota County. Including the closed Rosemont demolition landfill and our two active landfills that I mentioned. MLCAT is for post-closure care 30 years after the landfills have closed. So we know that the issues that landfills cause can exist in communities decades after that they close. And so the Washington County landfill, for example, which also has drawn on MLCAT funds, closed in 1975, and they underwent a $23 million cleanup in 2009. And so the fact that these funds will not be available for Dakota County residents in the same way that they have been in other counties is a big concern. And that particular county seeing a $23 million cleanup need, that landfill is about a tenth the size of the landfill that we are talking about in Dakota County. So risks and needs are much greater for the landfills that are still actively operating in Dakota County. Without this bill to replenish the MLCAT account and the existing and estimated future balance of the fund at risk, the needs, the dollars will not be sufficient to address the needs post-closure of our landfill, both in Dakota County and at the seven other eligible landfills that have previously closed. So in closing, I ask that you fully fund MLCAT and approve this measure to begin to pay back these dollars to protect the public health and the environment into the future. Thank you for your time and for your consideration of the bill. And if you have any questions, I want to introduce, I've got Nikki Stewart, our Director of Environmental Services here from Dakota County, happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Richardson, is Mr. Mastin testifying as well? Mr. Mastin, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you, Matt Mossman, Minnesota Intercounty Association. MICA represents 15 of Minnesota's larger, faster-growing counties, including four suburban counties and 11 greater Minnesota counties, and including Dakota County. Many of the points have been made, so I will just emphasize a few and repeat a couple because I think they bear emphasis. House file, and thank Representative Richardson for again carrying this legislation 4 years, I believe. House file 410 takes a really long overdue action, quite frankly, to restore these monies that were transferred out in the early 2000s. MLCAT was created for the purpose of ensuring funding for these long-term care of these certain mixed municipal solid waste landfills in the metropolitan area. And you know, I would just emphasize that the fee is paid $6.66 a ton or $2 a cubic yard by folks in the metropolitan area with the expectation that 25% of this fee be deposited into the MILCAT to protect future generations of Minnesotans from the potential contamination related to these eligible sites. These monies were taken out for other purposes, and as the commissioner said, frankly, to balance the general fund budget and at least one significant occasion. And as most metropolitan landfills have closed, the fee now applies to a shrinking tax base as well. Closed landfills, as you all know, pose a permanent significant risk to public health and the environment and require substantial post-closure care costs into perpetuity. A 2000 study by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency estimated that the cost for near-term and long-term monitoring and response actions was over $65 million through 2049. And of course, that was in 2000, and we've had a bit of inflation since then. And those projections, if I recall correctly, do not include a funding that will ultimately be required after the closure of the Pine Bend and the Burnsville sites. So simply put, House File 410 makes MILCAT whole by transferring $29.5 million, reflecting both the base amount and the transferred amount related to lost earnings. And passage of 410 is really essential, I think, to ensure that funds are available when needed, in the amount needed, and to appropriately monitor and manage these sites, both to protect health and environment for local communities and to avoid further passing these costs along to future generations. So thank you again for hearing the bill, for sponsoring the bill. We hope you will pass it this year, and we'll get this over the finish line and happy to answer any questions.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Happy to stand for questions.
Members, any questions? Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for Representative Richardson or maybe one of the testifiers, but you know, I'm full agreement on paying back what was borrowed. I'm just curious how the calculation came to be. It looks like $14 million was borrowed. And I'm new to this, so I don't know how long ago that was, but how did the $29 million get to be calculated?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in terms of looking at the lost interest, we're looking at the time period since 2016. That was when the account was required to be invested through the State Board of Investment. So we're looking at sort of that time period from 2016 forward. And in terms of the calculation piece, I will defer to the department. I don't know if the commissioner is here.
I believe Assistant Commissioner Kudelka is here, or Mr. Johnson, who would like to speak. Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kudelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and work on land issues. Last year, the legislature had a request for us to calculate what would be the lost interest in earnings if the dollars were invested in the State Board of Investment. And then we did a calculation based on the investment at those times, the rate of returns, and that's how we calculated this number to come out to be the what's in the bill above the principal payment of $13.9 million.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there'd be an interest rate calculation. You kind of used it. Do you know what that number would be? What kind of an interest rate you'd use?
Mr. Chair and committee members, we used a rate of return depending on the historical use of the State Board of Investment. So over that time for non-retirement funds, it looks like it's just close to 19% interest was lost earnings because of investment earnings. And in bond dollars, about 3.5%. There was a split. State Board of Investment splits those returns 30% in the bond fund and 70% in the equity fund. And because of those two earning amounts over that period of time is how we got arrived at the larger number.
President Burkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those are big numbers. I'm obviously not investing correctly. Nothing further.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. Since Mr. Kadelka is here at the desk, I guess I would just quick ask where MPCA is at on this and if you support the legislation as proposed.
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we do believe it's a good idea for the legislature to pay back these dollars. The legislature created the Closed Landfill Investment Fund and MLCAT to have dollars available. It is the financial assurance for the state to take care of these properties that the state needs to take care of into perpetuity.
Representative Heinzman.
That'll be all. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on the bill? Anyone in the audience? Representative Richardson, we like seeing you in front of the committee, but I'm hopeful that this will be the last time on this bill. I'll just state that we've talked about catch-up and clean-up and fixing past wrongs, and there's no greater one than this in terms of the funds that were taken and promised to be refunded. And I don't know. I think, I would just ask if we can have bipartisan support for this, because it would be good to move this on and show that we, there's things that we disagree with, but I hope that after 4 years of coming, and, back to the question, we stuck time back last year, so there's been changes in investment and interest since that time. So I would ask members to really think about supporting this. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would just echo your sentiments that hopefully this is the last time that we'll be talking about this particular issue, and would just ask for support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no other questions, I think we moved it, right? I moved that it would be recommended. I will renew my motion to move House File 410 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Ayes have it, unanimous.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next up, Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Hansen, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I would move House File 609, the laid over for possible inclusion in omnibus.
And Representative Hansen, I believe you have the A1 amendment, and I believe you have some technical changes from House Research that you would like incorporated within the A1. And so I was wondering if Ms. Taylor could walk through those changes to be incorporated.
Madam Chair, members, the technical that would be incorporated would be on line 1.5, delete paragraph B and insert clause 2, and then again on line 1.11, delete paragraph B and insert clause 2.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Representative Hansen, would you like to move the A1 with these changes incorporated?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would move the A1 amendment with those incorporated changes, technical amendments, or technical changes described by Ms. Taylor.
Representative Hansen moves the A1 amendment with the technical changes incorporated to get the bill in the form that he would like. Oh, Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Hansen, just wanted to confirm that the change only applies to snowmobiles.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you. Madam Chair, yes. And I would defer to the testifiers as well.
Hi, please state your name for the committee and please then proceed.
Madam Chair, members, Representative Heitzman. I've been working with Ms. Taylor on this, and I can say it is certainly our intent. However, as well, the ATV enthusiasts and the off-road motorcycle enthusiasts would like to be included in this as we go, and we want to make sure that before this bill, you know, during the time, we do have work to make sure it correctly applies only to those entities and not hunters and snowshoers and hikers, unless it be the will of the legislature.
Representative Heinzman, any follow-up? Okay, great. Well, with that, Representative Hansen moves the A1 amendment with the technical changes incorporated. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Hansen, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to House File 609 as amended. This, you know, again, we heard versions of this in the last few years, and there were some provisions of snowmobile trespass that were adopted. MinUSA, the Snowmobile Association, is coming forward, brought these proposals to me on what they had attempted, and we had attempted to get last year and were unable to do so. So with that, I would defer to my testifiers.
And first on the list, I have Doug Franzen from the Minnesota United Snowmobilers Association.
Madam Chair, could I defer to my colleague, Christian Franzen?
Yes. Why don't you go, Mr. Franzen, Franzen C, as we say around here. Please introduce yourself for the committee and the record, and then proceed.
Hello, my name is Christian Franzen, here with MinUSA, the Minnesota United Snowmobilers Association. I would like to first and foremost thank the chair, as well as the committee, and especially the author of the bill, for hearing this today. MinUSA is an organization made up of thousands of members as well as volunteers. These volunteers groom around 20,000 of the 22,000 miles of trail in Minnesota. This bill is the same language heard in previous years, and it has been approved by all interested parties. We have worked with the DNR, enforcement, MnDOT, to make sure that the discussion and the language is to everybody's satisfaction. Basically, House File 609 is the modernization of the relevant snowmobile statutes.
And to the other Mr. Franzen, do you have anything to add?
Madam Chair, members, my task is to explain very briefly what this simple bill does and why. Again, my name is Doug Franzen on behalf of the Minnesota United Snowmobilers Association. And this bill does three things. And first, to before I even go into that, let me amplify my colleague's words, and that we have been working for literally years with the Department of Natural Resources to modernize and update the snowmobile laws so they work for all citizens of Minnesota. And we're very grateful that this bill does enjoy the full support of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. But as to what it does, three simple things. First is what a snowmobile looks like, or what kind of paint it has on it specifically. If you've seen a snowmobile, the current law requires a bunch of numbers painted on the side. Or you can go to the hardware store and get those stickers, and it runs about this long and is about this high. And frankly, they're useless, they're cumbersome, they're expensive, and they're kind of ugly. And those of you who snowmobile, I see some heads nodding on all of those. Also, the newer model snowmobiles, there is not space on the snowmobile for that. So what we have done with, in agreement with the Department of Natural Resources, is to agree to remove the requirement of those large numbers. And instead, what we do conforms to most all snow states in the country, We expand the registration sticker, which is on each side of the snowmobile and is accessible to all law enforcement. The current sticker is about 2 inches by 4 inches, and that's a requirement. The new sticker will be 3.5 inches by 3.5 inches. It will contain all of the information, not only those same numbers, but all the information that law enforcement needs to do its job to make sure the snowmobile is properly registered. And so that's basically all that is point number one. And being left-handed, I'm kind of a backwards person. I'm starting with section eight, if you will, and continuing my work backwards. There is a provision in the current law which on its face makes a lot of sense. And that is, a snowmobile can only cross a divided highway, because sometimes you have to cross a highway for a continuation of one of these trails. They could be hundreds of miles long, at an intersection. Common sense. However, as progress has moved forward in transportation and new safety initiatives, what we're seeing in greater Minnesota are roundabouts. If you're from the urban area, you're familiar with a roundabout, and probably if you're from greater Minnesota, you have one in your district, at least one, and you're going to have more. Now imagine trying to cross a roundabout with a snowmobile. It's unsafe, it's unseemly, it's disruptive, it doesn't work. It's a hazard. The other thing that we're seeing, I think you may have this diagram in your packet, is what is called a J-turn. We're finding those in greater Minnesota quite a bit. Don't see them so much in the cities at all. But it's a new and safer way for vehicles to turn off divided highways. And if you can see the paths where all the cars are going, it indeed makes perfect sense for vehicular traffic. However, it is impossible for a snowmobile to cross that J-turn safely. You wouldn't wish that task on your worst enemy. It's a bad, bad deal. So what we have done in consultation with DNR and MnDOT is a simple amendment to that language. It's found on line 618 and 619. I believe we're in section 5 now, that says a snowmobile can only cross at an intersection or at a safe location approved by the road authority. That may be MnDOT, it may be the county. It's in their discretion. So what you would see with a J-turn or a roundabout, the county or MnDOT, in the interest of public safety, may well say, okay, and working with the snowmobile clubs, you know, 200 yards down the road, you have a rise. That's a lot safer to cross at that point because the snowmobile or the ATV can see both ways for some distance. This simply gives the road authority that discretion to do so. It requires nothing. And I think it's great policy, and I, without being melodramatic, it will save some lives. And then the third piece relates to snowmobile transfer. Right now, the existing law, and I believe for snowmobiles, I'm sorry, that is Section 5. I was in Section 7. Section 5, which is also the same language is repeated in Section 1 for off-road motorcycles. Existing language is if you want to register a snowmobile you bought, a used snowmobile, you have to have a bill of sale from the last registered owner. That doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is the last owner may be dead. The last legitimate legal owner, say they have property, they have a farm, they've never registered their snowmobile because it's on farmland on their own private property. you simply cannot register those. You want to abide by the law. And then there's also those folks that I envy, the people that tinker in machines and engines. They may go to a snowmobile swap meet and buy an engine here or from a dealer, buy a frame here, and put them together themselves. And this, by saying the current owner, bill of sale, still requires it to be the legal owner. And it works very, very well. Now, the original law with registered was the policy underlying that was theft prevention, right? You could track the theft by the registration numbers. But guess what? Law enforcement does not track snowmobile thefts by registration numbers. Tracks them by VINs, vehicle ID numbers. So there, this impediment that is really hurting a lot of people right now has literally no purpose, no policy justification. And I will close by, again, thanking Chair Hansen, the committee, the DNR, and MnDOT, and most of all, our members who brought this forth. And I kind of think this is kind of almost a public-private partnership between a state agency and its constituents, and that makes me very, very happy and very proud. So that concludes my my remarks, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. Franzen, and thank you, Mr. Franzen, for your testimony. Are there questions from members? Representative Scraba.
Yes, thank you, Chair. The 3.5 by 3.5, you alluded to what's on it. The license number, the VIN number. Is there going to be a name and address on that? I hope not. And the reason I say that is it people look at it, oh, that's so-and-so, that's such-and-such. I just want to make sure that that's not on there.
Mr. Franzen.
Madam Chair, Representative, I concur with you fully, as does the DNR. It makes no sense to put names and addresses on that. It's only the essential information that law enforcement knows to make sure that machine is operating legally. And if they, within the law enforcement community, if they have your registration number, they can find your name and address. But the fellow that may want to steal it out of your garage, or the woman that wants to take it out of the parking lot down for a ride, they won't have access to it. I think it would be a gross violation of privacy, and we would have Rich Neumeister pounding on the table if that were the case.
All right, thank you. Madam Chair, the reason I bring it up is we have to have in our boats, we have to have this card displayed, a sticker. You got to have it on your person everywhere, and a lot of times you just put the sticker somewhere in the boat, and again, it has all your pertinent information on it.
Right.
And it seems, I don't know if that's going to be the rule here also, that you have to have the adjoining registration on you or in the snowmobile somewhere. I didn't see anything here.
That is, Madam Chair, Mr. Representative, Brandon. That is not the case. No, we, and if that were to come to fruition, Mr. Franzen and I would have significant problems with our membership.
Representative Scraba.
Madam Chair, I believe the chief law enforcement officer is trying to weigh in on this, if you may, Madam Chair.
I think that would be helpful. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and help us figure out all these registration stuff.
Good afternoon, and Major Robert Greck, Operations Manager for the Department of Natural Resources Enforcement Division. I am not the chief, so I appreciate that. No, private data will not be on the registration currently now, or if this rule does pass, it would not be on there. As far as what you're referring to with your boat registration card, that is not a requirement on with snowmobiles to have that on your person.
Okay. All
right. Representative Scraba?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And 3.5 by 3.5, and obviously different colors every 3 years. Are these 3-year registrations then?
Madam Chair, committee members, yes, it is a three-year registration. Colors vary by year. It helps law enforcement pick out expired registration and such, and would be about 12 inches from the ground when on a hard surface on each side of the cowling of the snowmobile.
Okay.
Nope, that's very good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Yep. Other member questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen.
As long as DNR here, if we could, is here, if we could just have them state whether they support the bill or not.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, committee members, the Department of Natural Resources does indeed support this bill. We appreciate the efforts of this committee and the author to modernize our registration, simplify and streamline transfer of ownership of highway off-highway motor vehicles as well as snowmobiles, and of course improve safety by giving the local road authority that discretion to find safe spots for snowmobiles to cross. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? Representative Hansen, closing remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Again, this is a bill that's been around for a while. Hopefully we can get this done. It's been worked on for a long time, so I would ask for your support. We're going to lay it over. May move it out separately, but may also put it in an omnibus.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 609, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill, and the bill is laid over.
Next up is House File 245, Representative Jordan, report on rough fish funding provided and money appropriated. Representative Jordan, would you like to move your bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jordan, I believe you have a DE3 author's amendment. Would you like to move your amendment? Explain it briefly.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move my amendment, the DE3. This is a bill that was rejacketed from last year. This language was put together with help from the DNR and stakeholders to make sure that we are up to date from last year.
Representative Jordan moves the DE3 amendment to get the bill in the form the author wants. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, no. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment, or the DE3 amendment, is adopted. Representative Jordan, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm pleased to present House File 245. Which is this year's version of the No Junk Fish Bill. And this bill is a result of the work that Chair Becker Finn did last year and conversations with the DNR, biologists, and anglers across the state. Members, here's what the bill does. It appropriates money from the Heritage Enhancement Account and the Game and Fish Fund to the DNR for native fish conservation. It also requires the DNR to provide a progress update by August 1st of 2023 on identifying native fish protection and conservation members and lists out our target species. And the bill also requires DNR to provide a report by December 15th, 2023 with recommendations for statutory and rule changes to provide necessary protection to native fish species. Members, I'm going to kick it over to testimony because we have some really great testifiers today. But one of the reasons why I care about this bill is because I find our fish statutes to be messy and confusing. I think this report is a good way to get a handle on what we need. Our statutes to be to protect our native fish and our ecosystems. But really, I care about this bill because I really care about our native fish. I come from a family that fishes, that talks about fish, that celebrates fish. I'm the weirdo in my family. I'm not a ichthyologist or a biologist that specializes in fish. And I want to make sure that Minnesotans can keep celebrating and talking and being weird fish nerds. And to talk about it a little bit more are some Minnesotans who do love to talk about fish even more than the Jordans do. So I'd like to kick it over to Mr. Winters.
Tyler Winter, Native Fish for Tomorrow. Welcome to the committee.
Yes, thank you.
State your name for the record.
Hi, I'm Tyler Winter. I'm a director of Native Fish for Tomorrow. And I thank you for the opportunity Chair, for to testify today in favor of House File 245. Native Fish for Tomorrow is a rod and gun conservation group. Mm-hmm. We believe that managed hunting and fishing create stakeholders that are invested in sustainable populations, because no one who harvests native fish should want them eliminated. But without consumption, there are few advocates. However, native non-game fish are effectively unmanaged until they become threatened, like the black buffalo, which you can actually see on page 34 of your fishing regulations. If you didn't ever think that a rough fish could be threatened, page 34, please. I just finished a presentation to the Minnesota Bar Association, literally over the lunch hour today, titled, What's the Catch? The Legal Complexities of Classifying Minnesota's Fish. I spoke for 45 minutes about the disconnect between our regulatory structure and Minnesota's fish diversity. First and foremost, this bill is necessary because the current statutes are incomplete and ambiguous. 97A.015 subdivision 43 specifically excludes any species listed in Rules Chapter 6134 with conservation designation from the rough fish. However, two species, the blue sucker and the black red horse, are in the chapter in this 6134 chapter as species of special concern and listed nowhere else. They're effectively unregulated. The rough fish definition does not even mention moon eye at all, but that's listed as a minnow in subdivision 29 if it's under 7 inches. I don't know what a moon eye is if it's over 7 inches. I mean, the current definition includes one invasive species and over 20 native species. I say over 20 because since it doesn't list moon eye, and then the fishing regulations, when you read them, don't cover some, I'm actually not exactly sure how many species of rough fish there are. Scientific management requires that native fish be conserved and invasive species be minimized. Like, no biologist is going to disagree with that. It's unscientific to manage a native species and an invasive species the same. Therefore, we cannot apply the same regulations to native and invasive species. Lastly, the time to protect common species is while they are still common. Our native fish support eagles, prey on invasive zebra mussels. They host the larvae of endangered mussels, and they're forage for game fish, and they're food and recreation for my family. The Constitution of Minnesota requires all fish be managed for the public good. And the public good is bigger than one sport, one species, one trophic interaction, or one kid catching red horse. All of those individual goods are best served by abundant, sustainable populations of native fish. Management for the public good requires maximizing, not minimizing, our resources. All sports people, especially those of us who utilize native fish, should support regulatory reform, because it is the first step towards sustainable management of Minnesota's native fish, ensuring that we can pass on our heritage to our kids. Thank you again for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I think we'll go to the next testifier, and then we'll open up. Pat Rivers, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Welcome. And state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Pat Rivers, Deputy Director of the Division of Fish and Wildlife. I'd like to thank Representative Jordan for bringing this bill forward and for working with us to see that our current efforts at the DNR are reflected in the current bill. Since last legislative session, we've worked to put a limit on GAR, which will become effective March 2023. We've also been meeting with stakeholders like Tyler and others concerned with native fish and native rough fish, and we're working with them over the course of the next several months to work toward the intent of this bill. So again, we thank you for the effort, and we look forward to working with you going forward. Thank you.
Any questions, members? Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I do have a couple of questions, and I'm glad that Mr. Rivers is here. Maybe if he could give us an idea, because earlier we heard that, or at least it was suggested, that there's little work being done to track rough fish populations in Minnesota. Maybe some of us might have heard that to mean that there's little management or no management. Could Mr. Rivers please confirm what work DNR is doing to track these populations?
Mr. Rivers, or
perhaps Representative Heinzman can repeat the question. It was a little hard to hear. Sorry.
Representative Heinzman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Earlier it was suggested that somehow or possibly DNR is not tracking rough fish populations, and there's no research and no information available. I have, over the years, 8 years on this committee, heard a number of presentations and some of those conversations I thought included data and research that's being done in this area. Maybe it's lacking, but I feel like I've heard some testimony from DNR as to some of the work that has been done in this subject area.
Mr. Rivers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heintzman, we do a fair amount of work with non-game fish as well. We do have our IBI program, Fish IBI Index of Biotic Integrity, that looks at presence, absence. We do note different species when we collect them. And we could do more to determine whether life history and the population characteristics in a given water body like the Mississippi River are such that we are protecting them sufficiently or that additional protections are needed. In the last couple of years, there's been a couple of flashpoints, if you will, of information. You may remember the video that showed the exploitation of gar in the backwaters of a river with individuals spearing, I think it was up to 100 fish in that event. And the second thing was learning that our buffalo can live to be over 100 years of age. Understanding that and the age at which they first reproduce, things of that nature lead us to believe it would be good to look more at our native fish and see if we're missing anything in terms of conservation measures that should be implemented.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that. I'm glad to hear that I'm not mistaken. It sounds like there has been research in this subject area as it relates to rough fish, quote unquote. Another just quick question, if possible. I am a fisherman. I live in Lake Country. It's something that's always a topic of conversation, and I visit with a lot of folks in the guiding industry and around bait shops and all over this subject area, and discussion is do wander into the challenges that we face in some fisheries. And so the question that I wanted to ask is, I think that there might be some misunderstanding. Are there examples of quote-unquote rough fish being overabundant and negatively affecting water around the state of Minnesota lakes, around the state or rivers?
Mr. Rivers.
Mr. Chair, are you asking about the question of overabundance of rough fish?
Representative Heintzman.
I'll try again, Mr. Chair. Are there examples of lakes, rivers that are negatively affected by an overabundance of fish? Because in those conversations with those folks that are very active on the lakes, there are, and certainly in their minds, and I'm assuming DNR has some knowledge of this, where we need to have an opportunity to take fish in circumstances where there's an overabundance.
Mr. Rivers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heintzman, I think that would be an individual situation. As a fisheries biologist, we look at a lake or a system and look at the balance within that system or the proportion of fish within a system. And if it is somewhat out of balance or what you consider what you'd want to see, management actions can be taken toward that. I think this bill addresses more of a statewide concern as opposed to a given individual water body.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad to hear that. I think that we just need to have those tools available and continue to have those going forward. So it sounds like we are in some agreement there. Appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm often asked if rough fish are bad for the environment. And the construct of that question ignores the fact that these are native species, which, in fact, are the environment. The fact is, our native fish and the rough fish community all have one thing in common now, despite the fact that they have massively different life histories and evolutionary tracks. In fact, the Moonie is as related to the other fish as kangaroos are to mammals. They diverged that long ago. The bowfin has been around since the Cretaceous. These are disparate, like widely ranging biologies, right? But they have one thing in common. The ones that are still on the list are all living in relatively shallow water and are visible. And so they suffer from what we call the illusion of abundance because you can see them. You can't see all of the walleyes in a lake or all of the rivers. or so even though a blue ribbon trout stream might have 3,000 trout per mile, nobody ever comes to me and says the trout are taking over.
Mm-hmm. Representative Jordan.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Heintzman, thank you for the question. I think that's one of the reasons why I'm really interested in what this report is going to say, because this report is going to give us an insight into what needs to be conserved, what maybe we don't need to focus on as much. So I'm excited. I think we all have questions about our fish, as we should, because they're fascinating. And I think that's the sort of thing that this report could really get into.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to our presenters and our bill author. I am not as much of a ichthyologist as the bill author, so I was wondering if perhaps we could take a little bit of a step back, and I'm interested in the difference, these terms that we're using, rough fish, game fish, and minnow. What are the differences between those groups of fish, please?
Well, I just presented on this to the Bar Association today, so I was just reviewing it. Minnow right now is a legal term of fish that can be used as bait, which includes actually quite a few different groups of fish, including suckers under 12 inches, various catfish, actual taxonomic minnows, but excludes common carp, which is also a minnow, because that's an invasive species that we don't want transported. So, like, legally, as of subdivision 29, minnows, and also includes leeches, are legally minnows if you refer to the regulations book. Rough fish is a term that first appeared in our state laws in 1907. And as far as I can tell, when it first appeared, it actually did not have a list associated with it. It was just like, you know it when you see it. It was like, well, rough fish. And it was like, I scoured the statutes, and it pops up in 1907. And since then, it's been used in place of, like, in places in statutes where you would actually expect to see invasive species, right? Like, you can construct a barrier for rough fish. These barriers are actually intended to keep out common carp, which are listed in administrative rules, I think it's 6126 or something, like, as a regulated invasive species. So we have a category of fish in the administrative rules that we can restrict from water bodies because they're invasive species. Rough fish are basically our fish that are live in shallow water. You can see them. They are not usually part of the American diet, although I eat quite a few of them specifically so that when people say you can't eat them, I look at them and I say, am I going to die? Because I just did. Like, but that's basically what a rough fish is. The lore is that these fish were not fully dressed before they were sold. They were sold rough in fish markets, and that's where the name came from. As of right now, Minnesota is only one of six states that actually still has the term rough fish on the books. And so this is actually an opportunity for Minnesota to bring its fisheries management into the modern scientific age, which we all want, scientific management of our fish. You know, because even if you don't fish, you probably like seeing eagles. And let me tell you, from the scars on the back and the way the eagles perch over my favorite buffalo fishing spot, the eagles like to eat buffalo. If you don't like zebra mussels, then you really want freshwater drum in your lake. Half their diet can be freshwater drum.
Members, any other questions? Sounds like a tour coming. Any questions to the bill as amended? Is there any other testimony in the audience? Any other testimony from the audience? Seeing none, Representative Jordan, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and if you would indulge me, I'd like to just end by correcting the record that I'm not an ichthyologist. I'm a legislator. I'm just an organizer in Northeast Minneapolis. But I am someone who loves fish, and I love seeing them. I like fishing for them on a fly rod. And one thing I really like is catching fish with my nieces. And my nieces don't know what. I mean, I try to tell them, like, oh, this is a crappie, or this is a bass, or this is a buffalo. But they don't really care. They're just excited to be out having fun catching fish. And that's really what matters. And so I'm excited to read this report. I ask for members' support. And that rhymes. And with that, I will renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jordan renews her motion that House File 245 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Ayes have it. Adopted. On its way to the Ways and Means Committee. The final bill, I think we've heard before too, or at least I've heard about it a lot, from Representative Erdahl. House File 509, Representative Erdahl, the Loose Line State Trail. Representative Heintzman, would you like to move House File 509 to be laid over for possible inclusion in omnibus bill? Representative Erdahl, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's always nice to end a session with a simple little bill. Loose Line Trail stretches 63 miles from the western metro suburb of Plymouth to the small town of Cosmas in west central Minnesota in Meeker County. The trail runs on a former railroad line and is available for biking, hiking, running, jogging, walking, dog walking, snowmobiling. There's also a parallel thread way for horseback riding. Snowmobiles are allowed on the trail west of Stubbs Bay Road. Now, what I would like, and it's paved from Winstead to Hutch, what I'd like to do is to create a spur or a connection off the Loose Line Trail in southern Meeker County to Greenleaf Lake Recreation Area. That's about 4 miles to the north, thus creating a destination for bikers. I'm not asking for any money, just a designation that this spur, this connection could be allowed, and it is supported by the DNR. That's it.
Any questions from members? Anybody in the audience who would like to testify? Anybody in the audience? Any closing comments, Representative Erdahl?
It's a fine piece of legislation. Thank you.
Representative Heintzman renews his motion that House File 509 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Thank you, members. We're done. And still putting together the agenda for next week. I did want to just confirm, Representative Heintzman, you and I had talked about the lands bill as possibly going on the consent agenda. And if we agree on that, it might be the first one on the consent agenda. So if you just could affirm that so whoever's watching
can. I can confirm that, Mr. Chair.
Great. So hopefully we'll be bringing that bill to the floor at some time. It's gone through Ways and Means and can start moving some other bills through the process. With that, we are adjourned.